A minute is to miss a lot. Thanks so much. Thanks for calling. And let's face it, you've got friends on Facebook. And I'll tell you what, I kind of wanted to talk today about some of the things that everybody seems to be experiencing in their lives along with this pandemic.
Hi, I'm Justine Thomas with another episode of Let's Talk. Today, joining the show, I've got Ace Acker here to share so many amazing stories from the band Law to his advertising, songwriting, marketing director, and so much more. So Ace, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I am too. I'm glad you're here. We've got so much to cover, but first, let's take a moment to talk about Coker's Pizza.
Okay. Attention all football fans. If you can't see your team play, come and dine with us and watch it live at Boardman, Canfield, or Cortland. Or staying at home, we'll deliver right to your door. That's Coker's Pizza. We serve it hot.
Ace, thank you so much for coming to the show. We have so much to talk about, and quite honestly, an hour is not going to do you justice. I'm so sorry. But as we were talking earlier off camera, I mean, your career has gone in phases, okay? So, and what I mean by that is you're with the band Law from 1971 to 1977, right, all right? Right. What an amazing story. I mean, you guys opened up for some of the biggies.
We did. We were fortunate.
Yes.
We met our manager early on in January of 1971. Mm-hmm. He was promoting a Brownsville Station show here, and we got tapped as the opening act. And at that show, he heard us play, and he offered to be our manager. After that, he was managing the Columbus Agora at the time. So he became our manager for our entire existence. And his family owned the Cleveland Agora.
Okay.
All the Agora clubs. Ran the Cleveland Agora. So through that connection and Premier Talent and others, he was able to get us on right away, opening acts all over the country for major bands. And we didn't have a record. We didn't even have a deal until 1975.
You know? That's when you know you're so good.
Yeah, so it was a great blessing, you know, for him to come into our lives and because of that.
So the band started in 1971.
Yes, January.
And I love the way you guys came up with the name.
That was very easy. We the band was Mickey Williamson and Steve Lawrence, bass and drums, and they had been playing for a little while under the name Senior Runner and the Half Moons.
Okay.
Anagram of Little Junior Walker and the All Stars.
Yes.
They wanted to replace the guitar player, and I had just left a band called My Uncle's Army Buddies, which was a 10-piece horn band, with a pretty good band. And they got in touch with me and asked me if I wanted to come hang out and audition for the band. So I said, sure. So we met at the Green. There was a place called the Green on the campus, which was a very popular club. We met there in the afternoon. We jammed for about 5 minutes, less than that, and we knew.
And you knew.
Something, you know, that's it, you know. And so I said, I'm in, yeah, but that name has got to go.
So well, was that your idea?
Well, crap. You mean we have to, now we have to think of names and names. And Jack Gertchalk happened to be standing there, the owner of the Green. And he said, wait a minute, I know your name. You're Lawrence L, you're Steve Acker A, you're Mickey Williamson W, L-A-W, you're Law. And it was that quick. And we became Law.
It was meant to be.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So within that time frame, you opened up for Bob Seger and your winner, Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
Tell us some stories. I'm sure you have stories.
Well, my favorite story, of course, and one of the greatest days of my life was opening up, was playing with Chuck Berry at the Lake Milton Festival. It's a beautiful picnic, I think, in 1971, I guess it was, or 70. I don't remember. It was 71 or 72, but it was a large outdoor concert, Alice Cooper, Bob Seger. A lot of other Detroit bands, Boko Haram was scheduled to play. They didn't play, but we opened the show. About 5,000 people, and it was a beautiful day. And then later on in the afternoon, Chuck Berry, we were scheduled to open to play at backup for Chuck Berry.
Wow!
And he had not arrived at showtime in 5 minutes, and he hadn't showed up yet. So the promoter was getting pretty frantic and was. Then suddenly he was there. He drove up in his rented Cadillac and his guitar. So and he was on our bus. We had a bus. And he was in a really great mood. We'd heard some terrible stories. Like a couple weeks earlier, he had had the Raspberries had played with him, and he walked off the stage on the Raspberries and like in the second song and did not come back. There's a lot of stories about Chuck Berry like that. If you, because he always used pickup bands, and he was notoriously
a diva.
But he was in a great mood that day, and he was laughing and joking on the bus, and we went on stage, and he didn't tell us what he was opening with. He didn't even tell us what song he was going to, and he just started playing "Roll Over Beethoven." "Roll Over Beethoven" in D, you know, hit the four, and we fell into it. And he looked around and smiled at us. And man,
that gives me goosebumps just talking about that.
It was an awesome show. He gave me two solos, and I would duck walking across the stage with him. And then at the end, he actually thanked us when, you know, he was known for just walking, never even thanking the band. So we got lucky, I guess, that day. He was in a good mood. And it's a fantastic memory.
That you'll never forget. You'll never forget.
Yeah.
Now, the band had two albums out.
Well, Law, we did three albums.
Three albums.
Our first album was on GRC Records, an independent label in Atlanta. And that label was owned by a guy named Michael Thieves. Michael Thieves was a gazillionaire, and when he signed us, he had this new label, independent label. We spent putting a lot of money into it, and he came to see us at Richards in Atlanta and signed us. Signed us right away. He invited us to his house. Went to a big party at his house, and it was a that was the house that later Dave Justice bought, and he and his wife Halle Berry lived there. Unfortunately, though, after we recorded the album, we learned that he had made all his money in pornography. The album was about to come out, wasn't out yet, and he was indicted and arrested and thrown for interstate pornography charges. He's the guy who put all the peep show booths in porn theaters all around the country.
He was
mobbed up, and Reader's Digest came up with a cover story that the porno Michael Thieves, the porno king. This was our record company president, right? Our album went down the tubes, and in November, on Thanksgiving Day of 1975, the band was playing at a disco in Tampa, Florida. Very depressed, very sad. Our album was nowhere. We weren't even in the stores there. Well, my girlfriend, Kathy Sullivan, called me from Atlanta and said, I'm going with my friend Jack Williams, who wrote one of the songs on our album, was a friend, to meet Roger Daughtry. So Jack Williams had hustled his way into Who's Inner Circle. They were staying there all week. Roger invited him to come to his hotel room and play his reel of songs, of his own original songs. Well, when he went up there, he put on the wrong side of the tape or queued it up wrong. And when he pressed the button, instead of Roger hearing Jack's songs, heard Law's first album and listened to the whole thing, called Pete Townsend and Bill Kirbishley and their manager. They listened to it. I said, let's sign this band, you know, and they did. So a couple of days later, we were in Chicago at their hotel in Chicago. By summer, we were recording at Criteria and on tour with them, and we did two albums on MCA.
Wow.
And it was quite an experience.
Any good stories to tell?
Well.
There's got to be. There has to be.
One of the rules that Bill Kirbishley laid down to us before, first thing we did, we played a show in December, about 2 weeks after, or less than 2 weeks after that meeting, they wanted to hear us live. So we opened for them at the Riverfront Coliseum in Cincinnati and killed it. And they said, let's do a deal. And so when we went to tour with them in the summer, he laid down the rule that nobody is to give drugs. If you give drugs to Keith Moon, he will ask you, if you give Keith Moon any drugs, you're off the tour. No questions asked, period. Well, sure enough, when I met Keith Moon,
first thing he asked me was drugs.
Huh? Hey, Mike, you going to get drugs? Whatever. I said, I don't have anything. And he said, he called me, you wanker. And he called me a name, and I said something back to him. I forget what I said, but it amused him, and he laughed, and he put his arm around me. You're my little buddy. So ever after that, every time we played, Keith was particularly friendly with me.
Wow.
That was a trip.
I'm sure it would be. Now, I know that there was a song that you wake up that you wanted to play.
Yeah.
Well, so let's do that.
This was our first song on our first album.
Yes. All the way down. Right down. There you go.
We'll just play a minute of it. This is what we started our sets with usually. By this time, the audience was already.
Oh, I can only imagine. Looking at your face and the arm going up like this, those were some good times for you.
Yeah, well, that was, we had a wonderful time. It was a good time.
What's some of the best moments you had up on stage?
Well, Chuck Berry and then mm-hmm. was playing with, you know, and Youngstown, when we were starting off, I mean, mm-hmm. We started off as a three-piece band.
Right, right.
As a three-piece yes. band, but we eventually evolved into a five-piece band. From boogie rock, from the boogie band, into soul rock, funk soul rock. Mm-hmm. By the time we did the albums, but in the early days when we played our first gig at the Green, and we just took off like this, boom, mm-hmm. like lightning, like mm-hmm. a rocket. And within a couple of months, we were packing them every place in.
Oh, sure.
And we played at a place called the Holiday Bowl.
Yes.
Yes. And a group of students were there from Slippery Rock College, and they were just gaga, you know. And uh-huh. they, man, we had got to have a festival, and, mm-hmm. and you guys headlined it. And, you know, and they were all drinking, you know, they were all partying and drunk, and, but they did it.
Feeling good.
They had a festival. We played the festival, Slippery Rock Mushroom Festival, they called it.
Okay.
I think around toward the end of the school year. And it was an outdoor show at Slippery Rock. They had a lot of bands, Pittsburgh area bands. And mm-hmm. that yeah. show, that show was really the show that spread our reputation far and wide at that point. And it was, you know, it was just the reaction that we're getting. It was like almost like the Beatles or something. I mean, people would just dance.
Mm-hmm.
We were a boogie band.
You know? Yeah, you guys were ahead of your time, truly. Well, really. I mean, amazing stuff. Seriously, that I could see you guys opening up your set with that.
Yeah.
Everybody's on their feet. Everybody's probably got a beer in their hand and saluting you guys.
So yeah. It was an exciting time. And we went through quite a few personnel changes over the years, but we managed to retain that essence of what we were. You know, we went that boogie stadium. Yeah. We were a stadium rock band. You know?
Yeah. You guys had, from what, 1971 to 1977?
It was 7 full years, yeah.
Wow.
You know, and ultimately after the third album, I was dissatisfied with.
I was going to ask how the direction was going. And
it was a work ethic kind of thing. I have a very strong work mm-hmm. ethic, and mm-hmm. I just felt like it had gone as far as it could go. You know, there's like three levels of bands, basically. You have the local level, local mm-hmm. regional level. Mm-hmm. Then you have the middle level where you get a major label deal like we had and are doing major shows around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not famous yet. You haven't got a hit singles yet.
Right, right.
Then you have the hit single bands, you know. There was a band that were friends of ours, Rob Parisi and with Wild Cherry.
Yes.
In 1976, when we were recording our second album. Mm-hmm. 70, somewhere around there. We were both staying at a place in Cleveland at a hotel, and we talked, and he was going into the studio to Cleveland recording to do a song called Play That Funky Music.
As we all know. Uh-huh.
Well, our single that got played on American Bandstand once, and mm-hmm. and got a good rating. I like it. You can dance. It's got a good beat. You can. Whereas Play That Funky Music went through the roof, and yeah. So it's. Then they were one hit wonder. So, but reaching that top level where you become a famous enduring band, that's they're so elusive, and we didn't quite make that. And I didn't.
You were close. You were close.
I didn't feel at that point we were going to. That mm-hmm. was not in the cards, and I left the band and went to Jackson, Mississippi, and that's where.
And started your whole other phase of your life.
I didn't come back to Ohio for 32 years.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knew where I was, and nobody. I dropped out of sight.
You just kind of fell off the face of the earth there for a bit.
But
and you probably wanted to.
Huh?
And you probably wanted to. You're probably touring a lot.
Well, you didn't have social media back then, for one
this
thing.
Is true.
You know,
this
and
is true.
Didn't even have the internet
this
until 1995.
Right, right.
So it was, I had a whole different life and never looked back. You know, I was fortunate to discover another skill that I, writing and advertising and creative direction. And that's what I went with for a very long time.
So the next phase of your life, you went down to Jackson. Your family was down there.
Yes.
You said your father was part of Packard Electric.
He was the director of operations for Southern operations for Packard Electric Division mm-hmm. of General Motors, which was a big
deal around here.
And Warren at that time.
Oh, absolutely. So then you started doing some of your production and some of your writing and your advertising. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that's propelled you.
Well, I was a copywriter to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had also had some, the first thing I did when I left law and moved to Mississippi, I cut my hair and joined an insurance company. I sold insurance for Combined Insurance Company for about a year and a half. You know, and I don't know why I did it. There was a local guy here named Bob DePiro who wanted me to go mm-hmm. to Nashville with mm-hmm. him. He was going to be a songwriter. And I said, no, man, I've just been married to this band. I just got divorced from five guys, you know.
Right.
I'm not ready to get back on that saddle yet.
Right.
Well, I went to Jackson. He went to Nashville. And Bob ended up is in one of the most famous and successful country music songwriters of all time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think looking back on it, maybe it wasn't such a good idea. But,
but you needed a break for a little bit.
I did.
You needed to find yourself.
And then I discovered this love for advertising and producing commercials and marketing. And I was pretty successful at that, too. Went to Nashville in 1985.
You wrote a lot of jingles, produced a lot of jingles.
I did, yes.
What are some of the ones we can share with the audience?
I'll tell you my most. I did jingles for McDonald's, for Sara Lee Foods, several, mm-hmm. you know, other, and a lot of local and regional jingles. My most accomplishment that I'm most proud of all,
mm-hmm.
Of anything I've ever done, was creating the first Dollar General adult education program in mm-hmm. 1987 mm-hmm. for Dollar General stores, because they were my agency's client, and I was assigned to come up with an idea, a PR idea. And I went to a Dollar General store that evening and listened to eavesdropped on some customers. I heard a little black girl reading to her daddy in the aisle because he couldn't read. She was reading the sign. And the light bulb. That's it. We'll make Dollar General, because their customer base was low income, blue mm-hmm. collar workers,
mm-hmm.
a lot of college, high school dropouts. Makes Dollar General synonymous with adult education, you know? And went home that night.
Wrote the jingle.
Laid out a program, not a jingle, but we never had a jingle for that, but this was an entire public relations program. The chairman of the board approved it. We put it out there. We created this entire. It took me 4 months to put together, and when we launched it, it was a huge hit, and it won the end of the year, President Reagan penned a medal on the chairman, Cal Turner Jr.'s chest in the White House for private presidential award for private initiatives. We got the Benjamin Franklin award from Saturday Evening Post. And so far, last time I checked, over $12 million General customers had learned how to read or get their their GED as a result.
What an accomplishment.
So that, you know, to me is by far.
That, yes.
Nothing I've ever done musically or anything else kind of compares to that.
To helping, mind, yeah. You know. Just because you eavesdropped.
I'm blessed. And today, I'm extremely blessed to be able to do both. In 2007, I was signed to a Sharon, Pennsylvania guy named John Hanty, who I actually met when we were 16 at Champion Roller Wayne. Our bands play together. He heard some of my new material and contacted me and offered me a deal. He was the head of owner of SST Studios and Rentals in Weehawken, New Jersey, right across the river from Manhattan. And I offered me a development deal. So at that point, I was in Jackson, Mississippi, and I took the deal, you know, and just dropped everything else and started writing songs full time, and that we're still together 13 years later now. You know,
wow.
We had university jams together, the college songs we did, and I'm their marketing director now. So that's my one of my day gigs, and the other, and then of course because our whole business was predicated on the touring industry. When the shutdown came in March, it hurt real bad.
Oh yes.
And we're back in business now, and I'm still doing work but we're all in studio stuff. So we kind of repurposed the studio, and we have clients like Alicia Keys and Bruno Mars, and 1 year, the year that we were working on the University Jam stuff, one week, John Hanty stopped communicating with me, and that was very unusual. And I was wondering what's going on. We're in the middle of this building this company here,
right?
And finally, he called me and said, I can tell you now why. I apologize. I can tell you now why I haven't been able. I've been under penalty of death, threats of death if I open my mouth. But the Rolling Stones have been in there all week. And I've been engineering their sessions and co-produced. And I was under strict orders not to tell a soul. And I knew if I told you, you'd be under. And he was right. I would have. Yeah. So, but that's the kind of company I work for, and I love this company. It's my life. I love John. John Hanty is my, you know, surely the most important person ever in my life, and I'm grateful to him. But when the shutdown came, I had already met John Blongero. John Blongero is goes by the professional name of Sun King Rising, and I had met him. He's from Newcastle, but that's right, the album right there.
This is due out October 2nd.
On Friday.
Friday.
Coming out on Friday.
Friday.
But we started working on it in January. I mean, I had become friends with him. He lives in Texas, in Port Isabel, Texas, down south, Gulf Coast. He was aware of my career and knew who I was and all that. And we got to be friends. I did go when he was in town last October, a year ago, in Newcastle. I went, met him personally, and we became friends. And in January, he was preparing to do this album and asked me to produce it. So, then a couple months later, SST shut down, and my income from that was. But then I had this project, and so. To carry me through, and it's been very, very exciting to work with. He's a brilliant, brilliant composer, piano player, and singer. And maybe we should listen to a song.
Let's do that. We got one of the tracks.
We did, this was one of the first tracks we did for the album. And let's see if we got it up there. We're looking for the snake. Is the snake there?
The snake?
I don't think we had the snake. Can we play it on the CD?
Yeah. Let me see here.
But at any rate, John has a day job as well, and he's so it was a interesting project to produce. We produced a lot of it in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. David Granati's Maplewood Studio in Ambridge, actually, with Pittsburgh players, and I did some of it here in Warren. Mm-hmm. But we'd used different studios, and then when the shutdown came, it was hard for us all to get together for a while. So I would produce it remotely, and the guys would do their parts in their studios. And
you know which one it is?
It's called The Snake.
Be coming up here.
You don't have that one?
Oh, I just sent it again, so it should be coming up for you.
Well, we'll figure that out.
We'll figure that out as we go. Let's play another one of...
Let's see what we got. We have Rockin' in the Buckeye Tree there?
Yes.
I was speaking of my friendship with Rob Parisi with Wild Cherry. In 2009, we had started, it was the first time we tried to start the University Jams project. And Rob Parisi and I, Rob was down in Tampa, and we reconnected through Facebook, and we wrote and produced for Ohio State this song together. And he produced part of it, his part of it in his studio in Tampa. I produced half of it, the verses, I think, at my studio. And we stitched them together, and this is what we came up with for that.
Scarlet and gray, chance of victory. The horseshoes screaming from the Buckeye Tree. Come on, Scarlet and gray, you and me. Everybody rocking in the Buckeye Tree. Come on, Cedar in Columbus, Ohio State.
That's the Wild Cherry guy singing.
Yeah.
I recognize that.
Yeah.
Win or lose, cause nobody beats the Bucks. Go Bucks! Scarlet and gray, chance of victory. The horseshoes screaming from the Buckeye Tree. Go Bucks! Scarlet and gray, you and me. Everybody rocking in the Buckeye.
I have to give you a taste of that. So,
that was, I love that.
Yeah,
I absolutely.
We
love
never
that.
Actually got to put it out. It was going to be on later, a few years later, on the Ohio State CD EP that we did in 2012. Uh-huh. But because of the hurricane, we never got to release it. So most of those songs have never been heard before.
I'll tell you what. I'm wondering where the snake went. I want to hear the snake.
I want to hear the snake. Can you play it on the, is there another way of playing it? There it is right
I
there.
I mean, it's right.
Wow. Is that...
Come on.
We're listening to it off the phone now. It still sounds good.
It does.
Story.
Now, is there's a story behind this?
Well, that's the only song on the album that is not an original song.
Okay.
That was written in 1963 by a civil rights activist named Oscar Brown Jr. Okay. And then it was released as a record by Al Wilson in 1968. It was a soul song. I heard it. excuse me. I heard it on a... music discussion group I belong to called No Hipsters Allowed, NHA. Mm-hmm. Great music discussion group. And I said, man, that sounds just like, that sounds like a great record for John Blangero. And he thought so too. So we cut it in Pittsburgh and with horn sections and background vocal singers and the whole ball of wax. Mm-hmm. And it turned out pretty nicely.
Yeah. Absolutely, it turned out. I'll tell you what, I think With your career and everything that you have from the very start and in fact until now, you've got such a well-rounded career that has just enabled you to open so many doors and help so many people out. And it's just, it's amazing.
And well, I wanted to talk about helping people out. I just wanted to give a shout out and a credit to some of the, you know, this album. Now this album, Delta Tales, was produced in 7 different studios with some of them, most of the tracks we did with the core in the studio live with the band, but all the overdubs, most of the overdubs were done here and there and all over the country.
And
really,
you just pieced it all together.
I was able to use some local players, and I just wanted to, you know, some of the people that I somewhere I hear I've got I can mention John Safara, for example. John Safara plays on a couple of tracks on the album. The glass harp strummer, wonderful guy, who I hear is not well right now, and I my prayers for him.
Thoughts and
my
prayers
best wishes for him.
Yes.
God bless him. He's a treasure.
Oh yes. You
know, he's a young sound treasure and worn treasure. We had Bambo Kino playing bass. Catherine O'Neill, who plays with the Jackson Symphony. I mean the Youngstown Symphony Orchestra. And so Bob Esterly does the saxophone. He does as well. Chuck Hall and Dobra, and we did some mixing and stuff out at Mike Talanka's studio in Newton Falls. And we had a couple singers, Kelly Connors, Ross Chapman. These were all Youngstown Warren people that we used on the album.
Wow. And of course, he's from Newcastle, now in Texas.
Yeah, and he's from Newcastle. John is from Newcastle, yes.
What a collaboration of people you put together.
It was a complex process. Mm-hmm. Took 6 months, you know, to finish the album. But it came together in a very wonderful way that, I mean, he had a vision, a very definitive vision of what he wanted to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Joe Cocker, early Elton John, Leon Russell, Dan Penn, and he had a sound that he was reaching for. I think we accomplished that. You know,
oh, I think so.
To do. And I call it the rebirth of classic Southern rock and soul.
I can't wait to listen to this whole thing. Yeah. This is amazing.
It is on pre-sale now, and it's...
Where can they find this?
Well, you can go to Sun King Rising on Facebook. Just look up Sun King Rising on Facebook, the Sun King Rising page, and it has a link to the Bandcamp page, so you can order now from Bandcamp.
Okay.
There is actually 10 songs on the CD. We also have a bonus track that we recorded not long ago. Just add to it. And it will be out in vinyl soon as well. On its digital downloads.
You've covered every angle.
It's on Peacock Sunrise Records, which is a very fine label, but Nick Katona owns it. And it was, he has a label, a long established label called Melodic Revolution, which is a prog rock label. John Blangero was actually a prog rock guy before. And then, did I mention his second job? No, has a day job.
He does.
He's a world famous genetic scientist.
Oh, yes. He does have a day job.
Okay. But he's a superstar in the scientific community among the world. One of the top. Wikipedia ranks him in the top 3,000 scientists in the world. You know, and so throughout the whole process of this of this recording, he's also been, you know, involved in the COVID research and genetic research and tracking all kinds of things. I mean, very important man in the scientific community. So, and it's so down to earth and real and kind to everyone. You know, he's been a great blessing to me. I just love the guy and I love his music, and I'm so honored to be able to produce it. And next spring, we'll start a second one. He's writing now. For a second album, we hope to tour behind the album. You know,
okay, that was my next question.
Yeah, I mean, of course, nobody's touring now. You know,
right?
Europe is a good market for us because they love this kind of music in Europe. You know,
there's a niche for this.
It's called Americana. Really, would be the niche that it falls into now. you know, and there's a big market for that. So we're just now beginning our promotions of it, working with a promotions company and radio. And we're doing the whole ball of wax. We're doing it right. And hopefully this will lead to a long and stellar career for Sun King Rising. You know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, off camera, we were talking a little bit about you'll go out sometimes and maybe jump in on stage and do a song here and there.
I do a jam session.
Do.
Yeah, but I gave up the live thing quite a long time ago, really, mm-hmm. just for except to play. The last band I had was in 2010. I had a band in Pittsburgh called Blast Furnace. It was mm-hmm. a short-lived band, only about 6 months. And yeah, I guess, you know, when I walked away from it, I walked away, you know, I didn't, mm-hmm. I'm from the live thing. I had my fun. I had mm-hmm. a great run at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was thrilling, mm-hmm. but, I moved on to other things. And now I only play live in jam sessions now and then, and that's enough for me. You know, when I moved, I'm hoping to move to Pittsburgh in the spring, and if things have opened up there and the clubs have opened up, I am considering getting a duo and down there and playing a little bit.
Nice. It always stays in your blood, though.
It does.
Music,
you
know, no matter what, stays in your blood.
Pulling me back.
It does.
It does stay in your blood. But writing is in my blood, too. I mm-hmm. love writing. I'm writing a book, actually, with John Hanty, the owner of SST. And
okay.
we're writing a book about music business, about his experiences in the music and life lessons really to be derived from the music business.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working on that for quite a while, but things keep changing and it keeps, the book keeps growing. And so now we have another
it's
chapter.
It's going to be this thick by the time you guys get done.
And we're shooting for a major publishing deal on it. We just haven't quite gotten to that point yet. We hope to finish that. Book proposal
mm-hmm.
soon, you know, in a month or two, and shop it to literary agents. That's a major thing for me, you know, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. long after I'm my productive years as a producer and producing. So I mean, even though I want to produce records, I love producing records. I love this project. I've done a lot of producing in my years. This is by no means my first production project, but
right.
I love producing, and I want to do that. But long after my productive years as a producer,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can still write. I can write for till I die. You know, writers mm-hmm. write till they die, and mm-hmm. That's what I'm hoping. So that's why this book and the writing that I'm doing for SST, and also I wrote for the news for the Tribune Chronicle and the Vindicator
yes.
here last year for from August to March.
Mm-hmm.
Until they cut their budget mm-hmm. for them. I was doing front page stories on personality profiles.
I was just going to say
they were fun. I did. One particularly that I enjoyed was for an old friend back in the early days in Youngstown, Fuzzy Palumbo,
mm-hmm.
who was a celebrated dancer. Everybody knew Fuzzy Palumbo. Flamboyant, ahead of his time, wonderful, wonderful man. And he had just moved back after 30 years himself away from him. So I did a story on him. I did a story on, you know, just 28 different stories. And before they chopped
yeah.
the budget. And I really enjoyed that. And I want to do more of that as well
mm-hmm.
in the future. In writing. So my future really isn't hopefully in record production. And
it's
writing.
In writing. Yeah. Writing as well.
Yeah.
You've got a God-gifted talent. Not only can you pick something that's going to take off like you did here, but I'll tell you what, like I said, you have helped so many people along the way. Tell us about the Dollar General.
Well, the dollar, I told you about the Dollar mm-hmm. Education program.
Yes, yes.
One other thing that we did with Dollar Education, that was a program in Nashville for inner city, provide instruments
mm-hmm.
for inner city children
yes.
and lessons
mm-hmm.
for inner city
mm-hmm.
Poor children who couldn't mm-hmm. afford them. That was a gratifying project.
Mm-hmm. It is gratifying. It's gratifying to help somebody.
You know, and mentoring people too. You know, mm-hmm. that's another thing I hope to get. David Granati down in Ambridge, Pennsylvania, who is with dear friend and
mm-hmm.
engineered quite mm-hmm. a lot of the album. David, and Joe Macri also was a bass player who used to play with a band called Crack the Sky, which mm-hmm. is a very popular band. And, they both have rock schools and active schools for rock for young children, young kids, mm-hmm. to learn how to play instruments and learn how to play together nice. In bands. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. I mean, they're helping people with that. It's, mm-hmm. Larry Lozier is another friend of mine in Austin Town who has a company called Poetry Rocks mm-hmm. Schools, where he has developed a poetry. He writes pop songs to classic poetry by Wordsworth and E.E. Cummings and St. Vincent Millay. You know, the great. Mm-hmm. He takes these classic poetry and sets them to music in pop songs, mm-hmm. and then has created a lesson plan.
Uh-huh. Helps them learn.
Entirely lesson yes. plan for schools. Mm-hmm. And a lot of schools are adopting it. So he's helping people that way. And I really admire that. And I do hope to find that, you know, I had a long period of time after 2012, after we did the University Jam things, where Hurricane Sandy destroyed the studio and destroyed everything. I lost everything in the hurricane or as a result of the hurricane. And over the next 5 years, and I had a 5-year down period where I was struggled quite a mm-hmm. lot, and so did John Hanty because he had been injured in an automobile accident. So those were some bad years for us. We're back on our feet now, blowing and gone. But you know, now that I am back on my feet, one mm-hmm. of the things I definitely want to do is find ways to mentor people and help young people, mm-hmm. However I can.
Now, there's one thing in particular, and I ran across this as I was doing my homework, and you were so fascinating, I couldn't stop finding more information about you. Tell us about the John Lennon and Yoko Ono.
Oh, that was a wonderful thing, yeah.
Yes.
So when I first moved to Jackson, Mississippi, I got the job with the insurance company. Mm-hmm. I was on the road with going door to door, store to store, and floor to floor. That ain't no more. pardon me. I believe this one's just also, you know, selling little cheap insurance policies. And my mother called me one day and said, "I read an article, an ad in the paper here that they're looking for a writer for the newspaper. Have you ever considered doing that?" I said, "No, I never have. And why don't you try it?" So I did. The Sex Pistols had just come to America and pretty much bombed, you know. Uh-huh. So I wrote an article called Why the Sex Pistols Backfired, and I submitted it to this paper, and they published it and asked me for more. And that's what really launched me on my writing career. You know, I started, that was in 1978. You know, mm-hmm. And one of the stories that I did in 1980 was on the night that John Lennon was shot, mm-hmm. and I wrote a eulogy. It was mm-hmm. a very brief eulogy. It started off, I can remember it, that the reunion of the world has awaited is about to be. The head, the hands, and the feet of the Beatles are to join together to mourn the soul that gave them life. Well, a couple months later, Yoko Ono read that. And she was subscribing to clippings of all the eulogies around the country, and she saw that. And she and Elliot Mintz selected it to be published in a book called A Tribute to John Lennon. And
that's my.
Tremendous honor, and did a lot. Mm-hmm. Did a lot for me.
You know,
that was one of the things that led to me getting my first job in the advertising business.
And then it's amazing. All these doors just... As you casually went through life, all these doors that opened from one interaction to the next interaction that propelled you to the next, to the next.
Well, they usually come at times when I'm very positive and very... There's one thing I've learned, and it's taken me, what, 69 now. So, is that the law of attraction, and that you attract that which you think about. Mm-hmm. And in the times in my life when I have not, when I've been in dark spaces, and there have been a few times, mm-hmm. and dark places, and my thinking was screwed up and negative, I mm-hmm. was attracting only negative people. In fact, I have a song that was very true for a long time. It was called I'm a Lunatic Magnet. Yeah, I'm a Lunatic
Magnet.
I was a Lunatic Magnet. Oh, my God. And it caused me a lot of problems, you know. But then as I evolved and I started coming out of this last period of time and developed a positive outlook and gratitude, you know, tremendous gratitude. Every day I feel gratitude for what I have now because of, I remember what I didn't, when I didn't, you know.
Sure.
And the more that I become, get into this frame of mind and this spiritual state, the more I find myself attracting good people into my life. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lunatic magnet.
Right, no, not at all. Yeah. Not at all.
So
you've been blessed in so many ways.
I think this is something that, and I've talked about this with some of my friends who were in, have been in bad places. And I said, you know, you take responsibility for your own choices. Mm-hmm. You know, be grateful for what you have. Mm-hmm. Stay positive. Always look on the bright side of things. Mm-hmm. And your life will change. Mm-hmm. It changed for me.
Oh, absolutely. Your life is amazing. And it deserves to be a novel. Honest to goodness.
Thank you.
Before we close things up, is there any of, we've got a few that we haven't played.
All right. Hey, yeah, we got one. All right. I'll play just, this is a, we'll start with the beginning. Okay. This is called Ain't Been Here in a Long Time. Mm-hmm. This was actually, Wake Up was what we started with after we started making the records and stuff. But when we first started off as a band, Law, as a three-piece band, this was the opening number we would play.
Okay.
And we'll give it, we'll give that a shot. It's the second one down, right?
Uh-huh. There you go.
And this was Mickey Williamson, Steve Lawrence, Steve Ackler, and Mickey Williamson, L.A.W. This was it. You can hear it. There was a progression from this to Wake Up, you know, this one. By this time, we got people up again.
Oh,
yes, that was our whole ball of wax. So I hope that there are a few people out there maybe listening or watching that remember that. That every once in a while I get a message from somebody who said, I remember you were part of my life when I was young, when I was a kid. You know, your band Law was just... That's always tremendously satisfying. You know, it's worth it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad you came on, shared your story and came on the show today and educated us a little bit and what we can expect and look forward to coming out. Because let's face it, we've had a bad 2020.
We have. So make it better. Go to check out Sun King Rising. Mm-hmm. There's a Facebook page, just Sun King Rising, three words. There's also a Bandcamp page, and from the Facebook page, it links to sunkingrising.com. But Facebook page is pretty complete, and you can go to the Bandcamp page. Order the album.
Order the album, please.
You'll love it, I promise. It's got 10 songs, and it's and a bonus track.
And a lot of local talent that's on that.
A lot of local talent, a lot of Pittsburgh talent as well.
And real quick, before we close things out, we have somebody else to thank.
I have somebody else to thank.
Howard's.
Huh? Howard. Oh, Howard Jones. Howard. Yeah, Howard was hooked me up with you.
I know. Yeah. I love Howard.
Howard's a great person. I have never met him personally. We did talk on the phone. And I really enjoyed the talk. And yeah, Howard, I'm grateful to for you introducing me to Justine here.
So thank you so much, Howard. And Howard and I will be discussing a lot of things in the future. But this was just such a positive interview today. I'm so glad you came on board. And thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown. I'm Justine Thomas. Thanks for watching or listening. You miss a minute, you miss a lot. See you Thursday. Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.